And more worryingly, there were signs from an initial study that the wiring was crudely connected to the Kron. There was every chance that the device may not go off on time. More alarmingly, it could be that the wires would short when he disconnected them because of the way they were fitted. Actually, disarming a bomb like this was simple, if it was well made. It was the crudity that made it dangerous.
Jack, get out and tell the others to take cover.
Show?
Uh-huh. And hurry.
Without taking his eyes from the bomb, mentally dissecting every part of it to see if there were some flaw he could detect, JB listened while Jack left the building and relayed his message to the others. He heard them move back in the otherwise silent night, and only when their footfalls told of a sufficient distance did he move. His hands steady in the lamplight, JB took one of the wires joining the Kron and the Plasex and straightened it out so that he could see how much slack he had to play with. 6 inches, and he could lay the wire on the flat metal surface of a valve plate. He then took his technoknife and steadied the wire as it lay flat. This was something he had to do quickly and cleanly. He had no wire cutter, so he had to use the whetted blade of the Techna to slice through the wire in one swift cut. There would be no second chance, no opportunity to take a second cut. JB was suddenly aware of the quiet around him, and the sweat that was gathering on his forehead and running toward his eyes. It was now or never. With his jaw set so tight that he could feel his teeth grind together, JB sliced with the Techna. The wire cut clean through in one move, and the blade scored on the metal valve plate. He could hear the ticking of the Kron, could hear the pounding of his heart, and the blood that coursed through his veins. The bomb hadn't gone off, and he was still alive. The armorer slumped slightly, and then, drawing a deep breath, he sliced the other wire and threw the Kron across the room. He examined the Plasex, thinking that it might come in handy after he had ascertained if it had been stolen from the refinery's stocks, and only then did he call the others. They collected the horses and rode back to Sec Camp after checking for any traces that could be found. Jack retrieved the Kron from where the relieved armorer had thrown it, and it told them nothing, being just part of an old wrist Kron that was battered and dust-gridded. The Plasex didn't come from the worksite, as they immediately checked the types of Plasex in the store area. Not only was it of a different type, but also the store showed no signs of breaking and entering. The tracks of the WAG could have been from any vehicle, and headed off to the road where they would be lost. There were also no signs that the fuel tank of the WAG had been hit. At least a trail of lost fuel would suggest a chance of catching up with the saboteur. Ryan reported the matter to Mile, who checked it in with Baron Silas via the radio. When Mile asked why they hadn't used their handsets to call for assistance, Ryan told him simply that no one could have arrived in time to help, a point the sec chief had to concede. Their patrol ended with the knowledge that they had stamped their authority on the camp and had thwarted another attempt to sabotage the refinery. But they were still no nearer to finding out who was responsible, although the odds were getting better on it being an outside job, as JB had suspected. If so, then it was a matter of who and why. It was something that would be hard to answer as long as trouble continued to distract them within the camp. Their next patrol was the following evening, and they had spent the day resting and maintaining their arms before getting in a little more practice on the horses. Mildred was still worried about Dean's allergy, and after he had spent some time on horseback during the afternoon, she had him in their sleeping quarters, stripped and laid out on one of their makeshift beds. She examined the hives that peppered his upper body and thighs.
How's it been feeling?
Dean winced as she probed at a small cluster on his ribs.
Could be better. At least I don't have any on my balls, which would drive me crazy, or too many on my face. If they were near my eyes...
Yeah, that could be tricky. Tell me, and be honest, how have you been feeling?
Like I said, they don't itch too much, and they're manageable.
I didn't mean the hives. Tell me if you've been feeling unclear or drowsy.
Dean propped himself up on one elbow, meeting her steady gaze.
I haven't had anything like that. What's this about?
It could be that I'm worrying unnecessarily, but the injections I've had to give you for this allergy can lead to symptoms that would affect your concentration and...
And the last thing we need right now is me letting anyone down because I'm not triple alert at the right time. Honestly, I haven't had anything like that. If I had, I would have come straight to you because I was worried. The last thing I want to do is set myself or anyone up for a chilling because of a bunch of horse fleas.
Okay, I believe you on that, but I had to check. Still, you won't have to worry about that anymore, because we've just run out of injections. All we can do now is eke out the cream and hope for the best. There may be enough residual of the drug in your system to keep the irritation to a minimum, but it may get unpleasant from here.
This place is already a pest hole, so I guess I can live with it. As long as we can clear this up quickly.
Lord, don't we all want that.
The rest of the companions echoed those sentiments. Shortly before they were due to begin their patrol, Crow, who had ridden in on the sec camp supply wag, bringing food from Salvation, joined them.
What brings you here?
Despite his apparently friendly greeting, there was an undertone to the one-eyed man's voice that suggested he was less than pleased to see Baron Silas's right-hand man. Crow smiled, slow and easy, and replied in a manner that suggested he was only too well aware of Ryan's attitude.
Well, I was just heading out this way to catch me some sun, and I thought it might be good to drop in and see how you're all doing. No, you know I am here. Baron Silas got Miles' report and wants to know more.
There's a little more to tell. Maybe we'll find out more tonight. Whoever it is might come back and try to finish the task.
Perhaps. I figured that was how it was. But the Baron's more nervous than a virgin first time around. Mind if I ride with you? Maybe I can report back then and let you guys get on with it.
Ryan glanced at his fellow riders. There seemed to be no dissent, so he nodded.
Okay, get a horse. We're about to leave.
Joined by the Native American, the sec party rode toward the workers' camp. In answer to Crow's unasked but obvious question, Ryan told him of their fight the previous night.
If they want trouble, they can have it. Maybe it'll give us some clues. But as far as I can tell, all they want to do is beat shit from each other and blame each other for the trouble at the well. We'll see.
They didn't have to wait long. The Hague sector was quiet as usual, the Duerville men keeping to themselves. But as they entered the sectors where Running Water and Water Valley crossed with Hush, they found that they were riding into a full-scale battle.
Fire blast.
Ryan heard the sound of blaster fire in among the clashes.
Someone will get chilled, and that'll fire up the whole camp.
Better get in. Hushmen are hard fighters, and the Watervilles aren't in the same league, even outnumbered. I'd back the White Meal boys.
Crow kicked his horse, spurring it to greater speed.
Watch him. Running Water is his vill. This is one time we can't trust him.
The horses clattered through the streets, turning into crowds massed around the area where the three sectors met. The outlying edges of the crowds were more people rubbernecking, trying to see the fighting rather than join in. And it was relatively simple for the companions to push their way through, scattering those reluctant to actually fight. The core of the action was centered on one street, and Crow was already in the thick of it, trying to break up the fighting men and women from the three bills. He had opted to stay on horseback and was kicking at the fighters, figuring that he stood a greater chance of hitting a larger number and not being brought down himself if he stayed mounted. But he was making little impression alone. Ryan turned to his people.
Off the horses! We'll make better progress on the ground.
And that was true. Where Crow was hemmed in by the fighters, the companions were able to dismount and attack at ground level. Although some blaster fire had been heard, the majority of the fighting was still hand-to-hand, with knives, sticks, and pieces of glass and metal used as weapons. Dean, Mildred, and Christy were quick to pick up such pieces and put them to good use, while Jack once more palmed two of his leaf-bladed knives and used them to slash at the crowd of fighters, moving swiftly through to the center of the conflict. Ryan and JB had their own blades to hand, and both men had learned to fight hand-to-hand the hard way over many a year. They took the flanks of the fighting crowd, their fists and feet doing most of the work, followed by decisive blows from the Panga and the Tekna when necessary. While this was going on, Doc made a path for himself down the center, heading straight for Crow, his unsheathed blade of honed Toledo steel doing its utmost to assist his passage. None of the fighters expecting such a seemingly frail old man to be so tough and fight so strongly. Within a few moments, the companions had cleared a path to Crow, and left in their wake a bloody and defeated crowd of Native Americans, blacks, Hispanics, and whites. Crow yelled over the sudden silence, encircled by the companions, backs to him, ready to fight more if necessary.
So will anyone tell me what the fuck this is about?
One of the hushmen rose to his feet.
We know these scum are responsible for holding up the project.
A Hispanic woman spoke up.
Bullshit! It's you people and your hate of anyone not white! And those fuckers are just as bad!
She indicated the companions.
You're a traitor to your people, Crow.
I have no people. And they,
he indicated the companions,
are on all our sides.
Yeah? With a black and a mutie? Like hell. They'll only help their own.
We don't belong to any of you. We just want to do our job and leave.
The crowd began to disperse,